Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Kerri-Ann Harries, a former elite swimmer and passionate voice for raising awareness around red S, amenorrhea, and fueling properly in sport. After struggling with amenorrhea and an eating disorder during her swimming career, Kerri-Ann now shares her story to help other female athletes understand that health and performance can go hand in hand. We speak all about Kerri-Ann's experience of red S and amenorrhea, and then we talk all about how she has refound her identity after coming out of professional sport and how this can be very challenging but totally possible in line with recovery. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. We have had so much chaos already. I'm very excited to hear what is going to happen next, but it is so lovely to have you. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited when you asked me. So, it's lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you want to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Kerri-Ann Harries, former Welsh swimmer. I competed at national level. So I'm kind of here to share my story as an ex-swimmer with red S and kind of navigating that and coming out the other side. So sharing some positive stuff as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's something I think that a lot of people don't know much about, but I can imagine that actually quite a few people have experienced it. So I think it's really cool that you are raising awareness. And I guess that's a really good place for us to start in terms of what is red S.
So red S stands for relative energy deficiency. And I think there's much more awareness around it now than there ever has been. So I'm 23 now and I was 18 when I was diagnosed with red S, but I'd never heard of it before that. And I only actually heard of it because I ended up doing some research myself. To put it very simply, is when you're not meeting your energy demands, you know, with the amount of exercise you're doing with the right amount of fuel. So there's not enough energy available just to support training demands and then your body functions as well. So lots of systems in the body just become compromised then because you're not fueling correctly for the amount of energy that you're putting out. And it was something that I had no awareness of at all before. When they diagnosed me with it, I just had no idea. So that's also part of why I'm trying to raise awareness as well, just so that people know what it is that they're going through.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, particularly in sport, losing your period is something that is so common and people don't kind of realize the implications of it.
Yeah.
So I guess for you, was it the case of thinking, I don't have a period, but that's fine because I'm an athlete and that's just a classic thing to happen? Or when did you start to think, oh God, I think something's wrong here?
So it was a bit of a tricky one because the term for when you don't menstruate is amenorrhea. So there's primary amenorrhea when you haven't started your period by the age of 15. And then there's secondary when you've had a period before, but then they stop for, you know, over 3 months. Now, I'd had a period when I was 13, but they'd never kind of been regular, you know, after that first one. It was maybe 6 months before I had the next. So I got to about 15 before even thinking that it was anything serious, really, because we just thought it was me settling into a pattern. But at the age of 15, that's when I went to the doctor for the first time. And it wasn't something that I was particularly wanting to go to the doctor to talk about, because I was a bit embarrassed, to be honest, to talk about periods. So it was my mum who kind of initiated it. And she'd started thinking, well, you're 15. She was thinking most of the other girls in school with you have started their period. But I just remember the doctor kind of being like, oh, you know, come back when you're 16. So waited another year. But at this point, I was having no periods at all. Like, they'd completely stopped. So waited until I was 16 and again went back and was then told, it's normal for athletes. It's normal at the level that you're at in sport for you to lose your period. So I think, yes, it's common, but it shouldn't be normalized, and it isn't normal, and it's a massive indicator that, you know, your health isn't where it should be. At this point, I think it was a bit concerning to my mum that I was 16, still hadn't started. But again, for me, I think again, I just saw it as something I didn't want to talk about. In fact, I would actually pretend in school that I did have them because I didn't want to be like the odd one out. And then when I started seeing it as a problem myself, I was about 18 and I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, why am I not having my periods? And all these other realizations that I was struggling with my relationship with food and everything. And it all just kind of just hit me at once that I was like, this isn't normal. This isn't right. And there's other things going on that isn't just to do with the fact that I've lost my period that are contributing to this. And that's kind of where my journey of getting better started.
So I find it really interesting, actually, that you didn't have your period and you didn't want to tell your coach. Why was it that you didn't want to have that conversation?
I think a lot of it did come from embarrassment. So it wasn't, it's possibly that those conversations weren't open in my home. So when I started off as like a young swimmer, they were never conversations that were being had anyway. And if they were being had, it was just in the changing rooms with the other girls who a lot of them were getting their periods. Again, was feeling like, okay, I'm the only one who's not having them. There's something wrong with me. I'm not going to say anything. As I got into an older athlete and was competing at a higher level and stuff, I still didn't really talk about it because it's so normalized in sport that I think not having your period is often kind of mistaken as a sign of fitness or dedication. So it's kind of praised anyway. So I just kept it to myself. And as I got older, I was recovering and had different coaches. I just became much more open and would tell them, but that only changed once I started making these changes myself.
I'm really interested. You mentioned at the start you had lost your period and then you started looking into it yourself and you started putting the pieces together. What were those other symptoms that you were experiencing that aligned when you did your research?
So I started with a really simple Google of why is it normal for girls to lose their period? And the more I was reading, the more I was like, hang on, it's not normal, it's common. So I came across the female athlete triad and it was talking about these three things that were linked. One of them was low bone mineral density. So, you know, a higher risk of injuries. And I'd actually just had a stress fracture because on top of swimming, I was going to the gym, I was running, I was just running myself to the ground really. But I'd had a stress fracture whilst I was running. So there was this kind of injury element and kind of being more prone to illness and that kind of thing. So I thought, oh, that's something I kind of relate to. And then this other element that really hit home for me was the kind of energy availability. And it was talking about how some athletes might unintentionally not be fueling enough, but then it was talking about the athletes who were intentionally not meeting their energy demands. And I'd never really sat and kind of evaluated my relationship with food before. And I think that's when, you know, the more I was digging and the more stories I was reading of girls who had experienced an eating disorder in sport and had lost their period at the same time, the more and more I was thinking, that's me. And I came across another swimmer who was sharing her story and who was saying that she'd struggled with an eating disorder, had lost her period. And I thought, is that what I have? And I, for a minute, I was just like, no way. There's no way. I don't have any, you know, that instant kind of denial. I reached out to a coach eventually. He was our strength and conditioning coach and said, I've been having a look and I've had a read of all these symptoms. And I kind of think this, you know, this might be me. And fatigue as well was another symptom I was reading about a lot. And I was always tired. I wasn't recovering properly. I was always sore. So yeah, just those were the main symptoms really that I thought that I could really relate to.
What happened when you went to your coach? How did they respond?
He was my strength and conditioning coach. And it was actually during lockdown. So we'd been having sessions online because we weren't able to go swimming. And he'd said, if anyone feels like they're struggling, because we've been in lockdown for a little while now, and if anyone needs to talk to about anything, just kind of reach out. So I'd kind of had this information, you know, in the back of my mind for a bit now. And I thought that maybe he's the person I can trust to reach out to, just simply because he'd just offered that he was there. But he was amazing, and I think I tell people he saved my life really. We just had a chat and it was the first time that I just offloaded everything to anybody. You know, even when I was going to see the doctors and stuff, I wasn't telling them how I felt about my body. I wasn't telling them my relationship with food, and I just felt like it was such a safe space and everything just kind of came out all at once. He was then the one working with me whilst there was waiting lists and stuff, just being that person who kind of acknowledged how I was feeling was valid and that there was something he might be able to do to help. So it was the best response really that I ever could have asked for from a coach, to be honest.
I mean, that's fantastic to hear, because I think so often, you know, particularly in these highly competitive sports, there's almost an expectation that you will sacrifice things, yes, whether it's your social life, your relationships, mental health. So I think how amazing that your coach really saw what you were struggling with and validated, yeah, that, because I think particularly, as you said, within the industry, if things like losing your period is being praised for, oh, well, you're clearly pushing yourself harder than anyone else because you've lost your period, yeah, which I also have amenorrhea, and I know full well that that's not right. But there is a part, yeah, of your brain that's like, haha, you know, you're pushing yourself and you're doing more than other people are. So for someone to actually say, you know, this isn't right and we're not going to praise that, I can, yeah, imagine was very helpful.
It was, and I think especially there's more and more stories coming out now, especially in the swimming world, where you really see that someone's tried reaching out to a coach and they've instantly been dismissed in, mm-hmm, a way. That not reaching your duty of care really as a coach, and has just made me realise, you know, that he was just the right person at the right time almost, because I think so many coaches prioritise short-term performance, and you know, they prioritize winning over your health, and they overlook these health risks, or they don't understand hormonal health enough, and they just assume that periods are just about, you know, reproduction, and they think, oh, it doesn't matter that you're not having a period, you're not looking at getting pregnant anytime soon, that kind of thing. I was talking about my body and my relationship with food was not something that should be promoted or glamorized, mm-hmm, or accepted in an athlete, or, as you know, in anyone.
Yeah. There shouldn't be, yeah, this kind of thought of, oh, we'll just get on with it, like it's part of the sport, because ultimately, yeah, you know, sport is something that we're supposed to enjoy, and you know, every training session is not going to be the most pleasurable thing of your life, like, yeah, we would be unrealistic to say that, but it should be a hobby and it should be something that you're enjoying, and obviously when it gets more competitive it does get more stressful, but not at the sacrifice of your health.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
I just wanted to ask more about your relationship with your food and body, because I think that, you know, there's pushing yourself in a training session to achieve, you know, the best out of yourself. But when struggles with food and body then start to come into that as well, I think that can make it quite a complicated landscape.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what stopped my period, was I was just not fueling enough. That kind of all started when I was 14. So we'd have team meetings at the beginning of every season with the swim team, and the intention was to inspire us or to motivate us for the next season. You know, the fact that I still remember this almost 10 years later was just our coach telling us, it's just been the, must have been 2012 Olympics that had just been, and she was reading out some quotes from athletes who'd been competing at the Olympics, and she read out one where this athlete had said, oh, I'm so excited to eat chocolate after 4 years. You know, as this 14-year-old, very vulnerable, and would just believe anything her coach would tell her because I wanted to be the best, I really thought, oh, okay, if this Olympian hasn't had chocolate for the 4 years that she's been preparing for the Olympics, that must mean that I can't eat, you know, put in quotation marks, bad food, because, yeah, I want to be an Olympian. And if I want to be an Olympian, I have to do what these Olympians are doing. So I think it started as a want to be an Olympian, but it was like I started cutting out more and more foods were being added to my list of bad foods. And then it turned into an obsession with only eating what I would call at the time as healthy foods. And at this point, I was 14 when I first ever won the Welsh Nationals as well. Yeah, so I'd kind of had a taste of success, wanted to be better, and it just turned into this really unhealthy obsession, which then turned into just never being happy with the way I looked, or being terrified now of these list of bad foods. You know, it wasn't just anymore, well, I won't eat it when I'm competing. It was all the time, until I think there is this massive misconception that to do well, you have to be the lightest that you possibly can be. And it was quite ironic, because in the pursuit of trying to swim faster, I was now swimming slower because I wasn't fueled. I wasn't healthy. I was ill all the time, and still not quite relating that to the fact that it might be down to the way I was doing things. So
I think when you have potential characteristics that leave you vulnerable to things like obsessionality, rigidity, perfectionism, it's so tricky, because ultimately you just said you won the Welsh Nationals, so you were clearly extremely talented, but because of those comments that you'd heard from other people and that desire to be the best, you're like, okay, what can I do next? Like, I'm going to cut out all of these bad foods because then I'll be a better swimmer. And like, as you said, in the pursuit of being better, you actually were making yourself worse. And it's such a like contradictory thing. Yeah. And also how tricky as well, when you're in it, you're like, but all of this is meant to be making me better. So you almost can't comprehend that those behaviors that you're engaging in are actually making you worse.
And I think it just got to the point where, you know, I'd started it off as a way to swim faster, but then it clearly was nothing to do with swimming faster, because I was still you know, behaving in this way when I, well, so I think the moment I properly realized was, you know, COVID was going on. So there was no way I was competing for a long time, because who knew how long that was going to go on for. But I was still so rigid in what I was eating. And, you know, my parents were asking, well, you're not competing right now, so, you know, why are you still so set on these rules? And it was because that by this point, at 18, I'd been doing it for 4 years. It had become really disordered, and it had then turned into body checking before every meal. Like, am I worthy of eating right now, kind of thing. So it just turned, you know, it was nothing to do with swimming anymore. It was more to do with this sense of control that it gave me, and this sense of power, almost, who I was trying to prove, if I was trying to prove to myself that I could do it or what. But it was just, there was no point to it anymore. But to me, it was the only point of life, even though it led to nothing in a way. And like you said, that comes with being a perfectionist and these traits that we have that can kind of make it worse as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that so often what people say is that I never set out with the intention of developing an eating disorder. I set out with good intentions, that I was thought I was doing the right thing. And then actually you get caught up and things become a lot more severe than ever what you thought that they would be.
Oh, absolutely.
So when you then reached out for support, what did that look like?
So I initially rang the GP back once I'd started seeing these things about amenorrhea and stuff, and kind of brought that word up. And they were like, oh yeah, you know, you have lost your period, that's what we call it. But we'd never been told about it in the, you know, the last 3-4 years that we'd been going there. So I was referred to a gynecologist for them to support me just before COVID happened, or, you know, just about that time. So I was contacted to say that the waiting list was about 6 months anyway, but that it would be longer with COVID. So honestly, the support really that I was getting was coming from this personal trainer that I had reached out to, and he kind of said, look, I don't have experience of working with someone who potentially has some form of eating disorder, or if not that, disordered eating, but I can apply what I do as a personal trainer helping people lose weight to help you kind of gain weight whilst we're in this process of not knowing who's going to support you when, just to start, you know, just to get things going. And for the first 6 months, I feel like I was just, wasn't making any progress really, because I still wasn't quite accepting the fact that I wanted to get better. Further down the line then, I did have support from the gynecologist, and it was her who diagnosed me with Red S. But just along with that came just this feeling of losing my identity, this constant battle with body image as I tried to get better and not liking this new body that I was in. And I guess that would tie in with the physical side of things, where I was being supported to eat more, or eat more consistently, and, you know, increase my energy intake across the day and things, because I did eventually get back into swimming while still in this recovery phase. And I guess that kind of just looked like slowly returning to training, because I couldn't just up my training instantly whilst still trying to work on these things. I think within 8 months, I'd got my period back. But the mental side of things took, well, yeah, it takes a long time, doesn't it? And, you know, there's, you know, some days now where I still have to work on things.
I think the identity piece there is really powerful, because, mm-hmm. you know, I think you said when we spoke before that you've now stepped away from elite swimming. And
yeah.
I can imagine, you know, when you are an elite athlete, everything that you do is almost, or you're like considering swimming in the back of your mind. Like, you know, if I go out and do this, how's that going to impact my training? If I eat this, how's that going to impact my training? But also
all the time. Yeah.
So much of your like gratification and the dopamine hit of winning a race or being a competitive swimmer, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So you kind of got that on top. It's not just that you're in recovery from an eating disorder and body image struggles, but you've also stepped away from a sport that kind of gave you so many positives as well as the negatives. How did you navigate that?
So it was quite bittersweet, because I did manage to, so I did go back to swimming, but for me, I was still swimming up until nearly 2 years ago now. You know, I fully stepped away from swimming. So I was able to return to swimming when, you know, with this new information and with more energy intake and that kind of things. And I did actually hit my best time ever and reached, you know, British finals and, you know, all these things I'd kind of had hoped for as a younger athlete. I actually managed to kind of get close to it. Didn't achieve everything I wanted to, so I got a couple more years out of it. Now, I stepped away eventually for other reasons. It wasn't to do with the fact that I didn't feel like I could manage recovery and swimming, because I'd gotten to a good point by the time I was, you know, 21, 2 years ago. It was a bit toxic, and I could feel all the hard work I'd put in to recover and get to a good place again kind of being undone by the system that I was in, and the lack of support that was there by coaches, and the lack of seeing me as a person rather than just a number. So that, I think, is when I had big, big loss of identity, is when I first stepped away from elite sport, because I felt like I wasn't stepping away from it for the right reasons. I was doing it because I was in a toxic environment, and that wasn't how I'd imagined ending my swim career. So I don't think I'd realized how much of my life was like dictated by almost by performance. So like you were saying, it's like you always think about how you're eating, how you're training, how you look. You're all these goal-driven things as well that always go on in the background. And I just didn't know what was my life going to look like, because I hadn't quite reached the goal that I'd set myself. So I was still in uni, so I kind of threw myself into really focusing on my course and stuff. But then within a couple of months, I found CrossFit. Now, I don't know if people would say that it's good that I just threw myself into another sport, but actually I think it really helped me see a different side of sport, like a community who value what you can do rather than what you look like, or they train to feel powerful rather than to feel small. So this gave me a whole new, like, wow, can sport can be like this. I just tried finding new things that I enjoyed. So last year I went traveling for 4 months, and that was something I never could have done when I was swimming and in elite sport, because you don't get more than like 2 weeks off at a time. Like, it was the first time since I was a 9-year-old swimmer that I'd had that chunk of time to just do something that I wanted for me, like without exercise being a part of my day. And I think, you know, my family and friends were such a big support in that initial time where I just didn't know who I was, because they were just there for me, and in the nice way that friends and family are, that they just listen to you, and the little things that you don't notice at the time that make such a difference, you know, just people checking in on you and taking you out for the day and just taking your mind off things. I think sometimes now I still fall into a bit of a trap of thinking, you know, what could have been, but you can't do that to yourself, really, can you? Because you got to be happy with where you are at, and I am coming to terms with it, and I've entered a new competition in for this weekend and stuff. So it's like competing for the first time in a different sport and seeing how that can also have a sport can have a positive effect rather than all these negative things I've kind of spoken about.
I think it's really funny that you mentioned CrossFit, because I have also gone for, well, I mean, I did powerlifting, so it's not that dissimilar from CrossFit. Okay. But powerlifting, similar to swimming, it's dependent on you. Yeah. Whereas I find with CrossFit, you know, one, you don't have to compete if you don't want to, you can just do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
But it's more of a community thing, I find. And like, you know, when you're trying new technique, or like I was learning muscle ups the other week, and the cheering that was coming from him, because everyone was like, oh my God, she did it.
Yeah.
And that for me has been really cool. And, you know, I totally hear what you're saying about, I've had people comment to me, you know, oh, well, you haven't you just like thrown yourself from one sport to another? Mm. And I think the problem is that we're very black and white, particularly in the eating sort of community, in that like exercise can only be an obsessional thing. It can't be something that you can learn to develop your relationship with. I will completely admit that for a long time, my relationship with exercise, when I was kind of saying it was fine, was really not fine. And I still think now I do exercise in a way that, you know, I rely on exercise in order to kind of feel a bit calmer and stuff like that. But I think you can get to a point in recovery where you just have to be honest with yourself. And at the end of the day, the only person that you're lying to is yourself. And so you know whether you are exercising in a way that is enjoyable and fulfilling, or if it's compulsive and you're doing it because of the demons in your head. And so I don't really think it's for anybody else outside to say whether it's good or bad that you've gone from one sport to another, because if you deep down enjoy it and feel fulfilled and you're making friends and feel connected, then, you know, I think that's a beautiful part of recovery, in that I never thought I'd be able to have a relationship with exercise where I did think about what my body can do rather than what it looks like. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that, you know, I like CrossFit because naturally it gives me a physique that I like. But, you know, we're also allowed to want to look a certain way and be happy in our bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, couldn't have said that any better, really. I think what does happen often is that people do think it's one extreme or the other. To be completely honest, I think up until that 4 months where I went traveling, I was still heavily dependent on exercise as a way of coping with things. So if I wasn't feeling good about myself, or, you know, even just like any other emotions, I would just exercise and just kind of bury things by using exercise. But so the fact that I was away traveling and I learned what else brought me peace in moments I would have turned to exercise just gave me this new appreciation almost for things that do calm me, and for the first time not having to use exercise. Of course, you know, at the beginning it was really difficult. I'd always, I guess, tied eating to exercise as well, kind of seeing food as a reward, I guess, or, you know, exercising to undo things or whatever. So the fact that for the first time I was also eating without exercise as well taught me so many things. So I came back in January, and just from January until now, I don't think I'm as dependent on exercise as I have been in the past. So I've turned to like writing or like going to the beach, because I'm lucky enough to live in Anglesey, so we've got beautiful places around, and just having a moment and being like, oh, I just dealt with something that before I would have needed exercise to deal with. It's like things you stop and think, oh, even 6 months ago I couldn't do this. So you're always kind of having to reevaluate where you're at, and like you said, just being honest with yourself. And if something isn't right, then it's you work on that thing, you know. It's always chipping away at these little things.
And I think that it's amazing that you can kind of look now and think, no, 6 months ago, what have you, I wouldn't have been able to do this. And I do think that, because one thing for me that's been a big part of my journey is, and I think we're very similar, is you know, learning to regulate emotions and manage emotions. And I think for me, using exercise was a great way to suppress that. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that using exercise sometimes to manage emotions is a negative thing. But I think when it's the only way that you manage emotions, that's when it becomes a negative. So, you know, for example, if I'm feeling a bit down and a bit like, you know, low energy and feeling a bit sad, going out for a cycle ride absolutely blows my socks off. I feel amazing by the time I get back. And, you know, I might have looked at that a couple of years ago and thought, oh, well, it's because then you thought that you were burning calories and now you feel loads better about yourself. But there is something about exercising that does make you feel good as well. But it's also, I think, recognizing that, oh, I'm feeling really sad and low energy right now. I don't have the energy to go out and exercise, and I don't need to punish myself to do that. I can, as you said, you know, I can journal, I can talk to a friend, I can do whatever. And I think that's been the biggest learning curve for me, is knowing that my reliance on managing emotions isn't solely on exercise. There's a number of things I can do. And also, when exercise isn't something I feel I have access to because I'm tired or exhausted, that's okay.
Yeah, recognizing when you're using it as a harmful tool and when you're doing it out of a harmful place, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience. I think it'll be like a really refreshing perspective to hear from people that actually, you know, if this is something people are struggling with in sport, it's not something you have to put up with, and it's not normal. It's just something, as you very nicely put at the start, that's common.
Yeah.
And I know that you've been doing a lot of work over on Instagram and doing like your campaigning for the Female Athlete Triad. So where can people go to find out more about you?
People can find me on Instagram on, I'm female_athlete_triad_awareness. Quite a mouthful. and I also do work with the Mintridge Foundation and Athlete Interactions as well as a mentor there. So we also support female athletes who are struggling with their mental health and just acting as like a listening ear there as well.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for all the work that you do. And I am really, really glad to hear that things are looking a lot better for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Honestly, it's just, I think, you know, sharing our stories and stuff is so, so powerful. So thanks for giving me the chance to do that.
Absolutely. Enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.